There is an effort underway to ensure that museums reflect the communities of the present as well as the historical past. To that end, they are becoming more mindful of diversity and inclusion. The American Alliance of Museums, the AAM, is a national organization currently holding its annual meeting in St. Louis. It's presented its Diversity, Equity, Accessibility, and Inclusion Award to the Missouri History Museum and the Field Museum in Chicago. Nicole Ivey, the Director of Inclusion for the AAM, joined me in studio this week along with Sarah Sims, the Manager of K-12 Education Programs at the Missouri History Museum. We began our conversation when I asked Nicole why the organization came up with this award and why now.
This award is part of our renewed intention on diversity, equity, accessibility, and inclusion. Part of the why now is that as a representative organization, we serve the field. We serve the field of museum professionals. And museum professionals for a long time have been doing this work in unevenly accessed ways. Museums across the country for decades have been, we might say, fighting the good fight around diversity, equity, accessibility, and inclusion. And in our new strategic plan, we made as part of one of our main focus areas, diversity, equity, accessibility, and inclusion. So part of the why is that we're responding to a demand from the field, and more specifically, we're carrying out the mission of our strategic plan.
When you say responding to a demand from the field, what do you mean?
What I mean is, as a representative professional association, our job is to support museums doing good work. And one of the things that museums have continually told us, our CEO, Laura Lott, went on a listening tour on her very first year. She's a couple years in now. And one of the things that she heard from museums around the country is that they really wanted to have more information on how to increase equity, how to diversify their staffs, how to diversify their impact across rapidly changing demographics. So in that sense, we're responding to things that we continue to hear from museums, where museums want examples of best practices, like the Missouri Historical Society. They want to hear leaders in the field talk about what works for them and what doesn't. So as a national body, we're uniquely poised to help museums understand those standards and have a dialogue, you know, with themselves and with the visitors that they serve.
Sarah, has this been an issue at our museum?
Yeah, so at the Missouri History Museum, we have been focusing on diversity, equity, accessibility, and inclusion for a long time. Like Nicole just said, these are things that museums across the country, including our own here in St. Louis, have always been doing good work around. And we've been doing that in a couple of ways for many, many, many years. We do it through the objects and the artifacts and the stories that we collect, because that's really where it starts, right,
sure,
is with our collections. The focus of our exhibits, making sure that we're telling multiple different perspectives and stories that represent every St. Louisan. And through our programming, we offer nearly 700 public programs a year, and then also programs for students and families, and making sure that those programs reflect issues of diversity, equity, accessibility, and inclusion. And finally, just the training that we and support that we provide to our staff also reflects those tenets, because if our staff isn't prepared to reflect diversity, accessibility, equity, inclusion, how are we going to connect our audiences to those?
How are you
going to
get people into the tent?
Exactly.
Basically is what we're talking about.
Exactly,
here.
Yeah.
Nicole, is the Missouri History Museum an exception, would you say?
I would say the Missouri History Museum is an exemplar. I think there are many peer institutions that are responding to communities in moments of social unrest, in moments of, we might even say, environmental crisis. There's a constituency of museums doing real-time response to social problems. So I would say, not that the Missouri History Museum is an exception, but that they are a shining example of the best of what museums can do to respond.
Are we suggesting that in the past, museums, like many institutions, were run by, let's say, white men, and therefore that perspective is one that that dominated the museum scene?
What we're saying that even today, many museums are run by white men. I think I talk a lot with colleagues in the field about the history of museums. So, you know, the idea that a museum is, if you think about it, you know, in a long form context or in a long durée of history, it's kind of a weird animal, or right? This idea of, like, there is a place where people go to look at objects that other people have, and there's a kind of choreography around the museum where we have historically sort of stood silently aback and gaped at old things. As a form, right, it's particular and kind of unique. And the history of the American Museum is one that absolutely is linked to elitism. It starts from, you know, sort of Peel and the Cabinet of Curiosity and, you know, a real focus on exclusion. So we are talking about an institution that has over time changed to really be more responsive and more inclusive. And we're also talking about the legacies of that history in what we do and who we hire and sort of our own missions.
And Sarah, you deal primarily with young people in your work.
I do.
So tell me what you've seen and what changes you've seen in the young person's approach to the museums as this has all evolved.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I actually, before starting to work in museums, I was a classroom teacher. Mm-hmm. And my first experience with students learning in museums was taking my students on a field trip to a local museum, not the Missouri History Museum. Mm-hmm. And the student said, "Oh, this is so special." And I was like, "Oh, that's great. It is special. Tell me why it's special." And that student said, "Because this is a mansion and this is the only time I get to come here." And that just broke my heart, because that museum and many museums are free. They're for everyone. They should be for everyone. And there were structures in place. There were barriers in place that student felt like it wasn't always for him. And so a lot of the work that we do at the Missouri History Museum is to, you know, make sure that the objects that are on display, and this is not my job, it's the job of the curators and the exhibit designers, but making sure that those objects on display reflect the identities of our many community members. So one of the ways that we do that is through our different collecting initiatives. We had, as you probably know, the Ferguson Collecting Initiative. We have an LGBTQ collecting initiative, and really making sure that we are collecting and displaying diverse artifacts and diverse stories. In our programming, the way that we do that is making sure that we are always inviting students to ask about different perspectives and different stories, either that they see or that they don't see, and encouraging historical empathy with those stories and connecting it to their own lives. So, you know, I hope that when students walk out of the Missouri History Museum, they have the skills to engage with it on their own level and also be critical thinkers in museums that they visit in the future.
It's really important to remember that museums are educational institutions.
Yeah, I mean,
not most people don't think of them necessarily that way.
Absolutely. That's part of our mission. We want to, you know, inspire and engage our audiences with these historical perspectives and contemporary issues. So that inspire and engage is really about education.
Nicole, this sounds like exactly what you're looking for, and that's why the Missouri History Museum has won the award, right?
Absolutely.
Along with the Field Museum in Chicago, I should point out that double winners there. Yeah. You mentioned Ferguson, Sarah, and let me go over to Nicole for this part of it. From your perspective, something like an incident in Ferguson, how should that be played and presented in the museum world?
That's a tough question. I think, and I'm interested in hearing what my co-presenter today is, you know, I'm interested in hearing what you would have to say about it too. I think the way forward depends on the incident, and it depends on the museum, and it depends on the community. So the Missouri History Museum's response to Ferguson, again, is exemplary primarily, to me, primarily because it brought the community in as part of the kind of museum authority. So, you know, not just saying, and now we're going to tell you about what we're, you know, about your society, right? We're not going to sort of tell you about how you should respond to this, or, you know, we're going to give you a top-down historical rationale for why you should behave in this way or that, but to listen to the community, to open up the doors of the museum to people who are really hurting. Another exemplar, you know, that handled a similar moment, I'm thinking here of Charlotte and the Levine Museum of the New South, and the way that they responded similarly by opening up the doors, by listening to what community activists had to say, and simply holding space. And the same for museums in Baltimore during the killing of Freddie Gray. So, you know, I can't say sort of how museums should respond, because I think each of those instances provoked, you know, responses from the museums that were appropriate to the community and to that situation. But I guess if I can sort of free associate, I think one thing that all three of those museums have in common is that they did listen to communities and they did sort of share authority with people who were hurting.
And Sarah, it's different in every community. Every community has a different approach to issues such as those that Nicole raised.
Yes.
What was the impact of the Ferguson exhibit, if you will, at the museum?
Yeah, so, well, in our response to Ferguson, we've done several things, from programming, just a couple days after Michael Brown was killed, and then our Ferguson Collecting Initiative, which has been ongoing. And in our current special exhibition, Number One in Civil Rights, the African-American Freedom Struggle in St. Louis, there's a section within that exhibit where we are displaying some of the artifacts that we have collected from the Ferguson Collecting Initiative. And, you know, the response there in that section, for visitors who have been there, or I hope will visit, there's actually a response board, asking visitors about Ferguson, but asking visitors to think about the arc of the civil rights movement in St. Louis, and the work that we still have to do. So, you know, thinking into the future. And I mean, the response has been overwhelming. I personally have been in the exhibit with folks who were a part of the civil rights movement in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I've been in there when there have been family members of Michael Brown in the exhibit. We've had students from the Ferguson area in there. And just I think people are just happy to see this part of our history and this part of our collective story being honored in that way and being remembered and being told.
You deal with kids K through 12,
yes.
That age group. How do they respond to it?
You know, that actually, it really sparks their interest because it's something that they know. It's something they saw on TV, they heard about from their family or friends. Maybe they actually, we've definitely had students who have participated in some of the protests. And so you know, in museums, museum educators are always thinking about how do we connect this old stuff to kids who may not know anything about it or have any real connection. And those artifacts, they have such a visceral and immediate connection to them. And it really, their experience in that part of the gallery, I think then transfers to some of the like older stories that are represented in the exhibit. And it helps them to understand how to then approach the more historic stories and more historic artifacts and learn and compare and contrast.
So it's a step from Michael Brown to Brown versus Board of Education to Harriet Tubman and beyond. That's the way it could work and should work, perhaps.
Yeah, it helps them make, like I said, those connections and kind of build that visual timeline in their heads and helps them understand how what they're going through now and what maybe their friends or just other kids around the world are going through is really connected to all, you know, our past and all of history.
Nicole, I have another question for you that may be a little on the tough side, because I know in your whole diversity program, you're talking about race and you're talking about many things, including the LGBT community and making sure that it's all inclusive. Not everybody is supportive of the LGBT cause. So what's your recommendation for that? Because not everybody's going to be happy that you would be promoting that at these various institutions.
That is a tough question. It's a tough question because I think museums at base promote humanity. So when we talk about what it means to do humanistic work, to promote sort of the best of who we are, I don't understand why there would be at all a conflict around engaging queer people. Engaging the LGBTQI community. I think oftentimes in our collections, we have materials that not everyone on staff personally enters into in the same way. But I think if our missions are, you know, at base humanistic ones, then I think, you know, there should be space for thinking about culture, art, and the safety and humanity, the culture and art of the safety and humanity of queer people. And, you know, I absolutely understand that there are, you know, multiple political perspectives that people hold around difference, but I think as spaces of collective engagement, as spaces that promote what it means to be human, I think it's imperative that museums honor and make space for human difference. And that human difference includes the human difference of sexual identity and or gender identity and sexual orientation.
Anything you'd want to add to that, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with what Nicole said. And as I mentioned, the Missouri History Museum has an LGBTQ collecting initiative. And from our perspective, like we are trying to tell the whole story of St. Louis and the St. Louis region. And that includes our community members who identify as LGBTQ.
And the disabled community.
Exactly.
Bring everybody into that tent. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So if we're only telling one or two or three stories, we're not telling St. Louis's story, because St. Louis involves everybody who's here.
We're going to have to wrap this up. Is there anything you want to add as a final thought, Nicole or Sarah?
Just a shout out to all of our wonderful community partners, because, you know, another tenet that we hold is that when we aren't the experts, we want to go to the experts. And part of the work that we've been able to do is really made possible by the partners who are so generous to lend their expertise and their resources to make sure that we are able to tell a diverse and equitable and accessible and an inclusive story of St. Louis.
Well, Sarah Sims and Nicole Ivey, thank you both for giving us a new perspective on museums. Great work on the part of our local institution here and on the national organization. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
The American Alliance of Museums, the AAM, is a national organization currently holding its annual meeting right here in St. Louis. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.